Well, here we go. It's a proposition to regulate marijuana like alcohol. What is this? Is this a criminal issue, a cultural issue? Is this an economic issue? We'll learn more. The voters get a chance to decide. It's Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, local in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. We've got people on both sides of the issue. It should be a lively conversation on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Craig Taylor Equipment Company, an authorized John Deere dealer. The Anchorage location just behind the Ship Creek Salmon Fishing offers a wide range of John Deere compact tractors. CraigTaylorEquipment.com. Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, we've got a full house for this one. I got guests all over the place. 2-4, 2-against proposition to regulate marijuana like alcohol. Now, I think where we'll start is Taylor Bickford, spokesman for the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. Taylor, haven't the people, the voters, spoken on this repeatedly?
It's been 10 years since Alaskans voted on whether to end marijuana prohibition. And so during that time period, public opinion, both at the national level and here in Alaska, has shifted really dramatically. People recognize increasingly that the prohibition of marijuana hasn't worked, that the government's war on marijuana, both at the federal level and the state level, has been an abject failure. And so I think that we're in a very different landscape than we were in the last time this was voted on in 2004. We now live in a country where the majority of voters believe that marijuana should be regulated like alcohol. And that obviously has some important implications for the political campaign that we're all involved in.
When you say regulated like alcohol, one of my emailers here immediately chimed in and said, wait a second, we have all kinds of dosimeters, all kinds of ways of enforcing alcohol regulation. We got nothing for marijuana.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that. I think that what we've seen in Colorado since they launched their legal market in the beginning of this year and in Washington State is both of those states have actually done a very, very good job of regulating marijuana like alcohol. Obviously, a part of the problem has been that marijuana is illegal and there's a stigma attached to it. And so it's really limited the kinds of developments in blood alcohol sort of testing that you could do because it's been kept in the shadows. And I think one of the advantages that we're starting to see in states that have decided to regulate marijuana like alcohol is that we can have an open conversation about this issue and that we have more resources available to make those kinds of improvements. What we know without question in Alaska today is that marijuana is here. We have the highest rates of use in the country. And so to the extent that your emailer's point is valid, that's a problem we're going to be dealing with for many, many years, regardless of the outcome of the initiative. At least by taxing marijuana, we can derive some revenue that could be used to improve our enforcement, which is currently taking place.
It's funny to hear you call it a problem. You know, it's also kind of fun, so they tell me. Charles Fadullo, spokesman for No On 2. So tell me, why oppose this?
Steve, this is an extreme initiative that is going to commercialize and industrialize a dangerous product. It's going to advertise it, and that advertising will be attractive to kids.
Now, the very idea that all these people, all these covert, closeted marijuana users all over Alaska that we know about, you can come across it just in the folk-like life level, how can it be all that dangerous? All these people are doing it.
All I can tell you is the research that's come from the Society of Neuroscience that says brain regions involved in emotion, motivation, changes in young adults who use marijuana recreationally. Northwestern, marijuana creates abnormal brain structure. The New England Journal of Medicine says it leads to addiction. It is a dangerous drug. In Fairbanks, we were doing a debate, and the doctor who was brought forward by those who support this initiative even said marijuana is a dangerous drug, and that was Dr. Kelly Drew. She also said it does, over time, lead to addiction. The problems here are, yes, there are a lot of people using marijuana, but what this will do is bring products forward that have such an increase in the percentage of THC that it will become more dangerous. This isn't the same marijuana that was used at Woodstock. This is not the same marijuana that was used where a joint had minimal effect. Rolling Stone has talked about how intense the high is with just the size of a Tic Tac when you use some of these edibles and enhanced marijuana products.
Okay, I'm getting it. So it's the vaping, it's the technology, which has improved way past the reefer man era.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. And so we're dealing with high dosages, and there's the problem.
There's a lot of problems associated
even
with it.
Even with low dosages, there might be problems. You want to, any answer for that, Taylor Bickford?
Well, I think that, you know, prohibition has existed in this country for nearly 80 years, and prohibitionists in this country have been singing the same tune for the majority of that time. I mean, if you look at the reason that marijuana was made illegal in the first place, it was not because of public health concerns. It was not because of valid scientific research. It was because of ignorance and racism. And in 1937, when it was originally made illegal, we heard many of the same things, that marijuana is likely to make you kill your brother, that it leads to pacifism and communist brainwashing. And then there were some other even more inappropriate things that I won't read on air. But the point is, we've been hearing the same tune for 80 years. And public opinion has shifted so dramatically in this country because we've learned that they aren't true. And the people that have been exposed to marijuana over the course of their life or their life experiences, they know that it is not a dangerous drug for most people, that it is relatively benign, especially when you compare it to alcohol, which is obviously the most dangerous drug that we have in our society that's readily available and readily used.
So if you're saying, okay, so let's say bigger doses, what is the, is that why it should be regulated maybe?
Well, I think it should be regulated, and I think that the bigger dosages argument is a scare tactic. The fact is, regardless of the level of THC.
Well, I mean, High Times has been talking about the increased dosage for, what, 25, 30,
Steve,
40 years now, and it has gotten better. Just, and now vaping, I don't even know what that does.
It is not a scare tactic. Mm-hmm. We are educating the public.
Well,
the whole debate that this is somehow a safe drug is being debunked again and again and again with scientific research.
Taylor's
I just
saying
gave you four.
But also as far as debunking is concerned, you know, the reefer madness stuff was really over the top. And it has all been debunked.
Look, we've heard this. We've heard these same arguments for 80 years. The fact is, regardless of the level of THC in any of these products, marijuana is objectively safer than alcohol by any standard. That is a position that is held by 75% of Americans. The percentage of Americans that believe marijuana is more dangerous than alcohol is about the same percentage that believe in Bigfoot.
You will hear the folks who support this initiative talk about alcohol an awful lot. This initiative has nothing to do with alcohol. This is about legalizing a dangerous drug that studies show impacts development of kids' brains. It will be marketed to kids. And I just wanted to also mention that in Alaska, the more people have heard about what this initiative would do and the industrialization and commercialization of it, the more they hear, the less they have supported this initiative. The latest poll showed 49% of the public was in opposition of this, and 44 to 45%
supported. Okay, Taylor Bickford,
supported
Charles says that the trend's going against you.
Well, I think scare tactics can be very effective. And I think that when you go out and
On initiatives, that's the history. You know, if it can be shown, oh, this is flawed, just say no.
And that's the strategy that the opposition is using.
That's what they always use.
And I think, of course,
they're not scare tactics.
Charles,
it's
hold on
education.
One second.
All right.
I think that, look, nobody really knows where the public is on this. We'll know for sure on election day. What I can tell you without question is that the debate over marijuana relative to alcohol is at the core of this debate. Our opponents don't want to talk about that because it eliminates almost all of their arguments against regulating marijuana like alcohol. The fact is we're talking about regulating marijuana like alcohol. And so its relative harms are at the core of the debate. And if we recognize that marijuana is safer than alcohol, then there is no logical reason why it should not or cannot be taxed and regulated in a similar way.
There you go. Logic 101, John.
So there is some lacking logic there. So a former Alaska prosecutor in the Alaska Attorney General's office, Dean Guinelli from Juneau, has done an analysis and says this local option and the ability to regulate marijuana like alcohol is a misnomer. This is an exact quote from a report that Dean put together. Many villages will have no authority whatsoever over marijuana. Even incorporated municipalities would have less authority to control marijuana than they have to control alcohol. The importation of marijuana is legal. It will be very difficult for communities to keep it out. And that is why many organizations, including the Alaska Municipal League, the Conference of Mayors, have come out and said, we are frightened of this initiative
right.
and what it means and will do.
We need to go back to that one, but I want to get the basic arguments out here. And I also want to get some calls in, which are coming in from Wasilla. Bob, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, got a question here. I hear a lot about the legalization of marijuana and decriminalization of it. But what about the effect on the workplace? Right now, both say the workplace, and let's just talk about, say, traffic stops. There's an effective way to check someone for alcohol very quickly, and, of course, alcohol goes out of your bloodstream fairly quickly. What about marijuana, since it does stay in your system longer? Somebody, say, as an employer, I hire someone, they go out, they smoke on the weekend, they come in on Monday, they're fine, but that's still in their system. And if I do a random drug test, I'm wondering where the ramifications of that are.
Well, you still have every right to do that, I believe.
Yeah, so I think that that line of questioning sort of ignores the fact that marijuana is already widely available and widely used in Alaska. I think there are people on the other side of this issue that honestly believe that passing ballot measure 2 will airdrop marijuana into the state for the first time. The fact is, this is an issue that employers are currently dealing with. And you heard the same sort of scare tactics on the campaign trail in Colorado. They said the economy is going to, is going to go into the gutter. We are going to have all of these, impacts on our economy. Colorado's economy is booming. Their governor, John Hickenlooper, has come out repeatedly and said, look, this hasn't had any impact on our economy. If anything, it's created tax revenue for the state. It's created 10,000 jobs for the citizens of Colorado. And so these issues about workplace effects, those are issues we're currently dealing with. Those are issues we're going to have to continue dealing with regardless of the outcome of the initiative. And the fact is, the initiative spells out very clearly that employers can maintain their same policy. So that's something that we're going to have to deal with as Alaskans regardless of the outcome of the initiative.
Okay, Bob?
Well, I guess the question then is just that. Is it, would I still have the right to hire
yes.
an employee yeah. for having that in their system?
The answer is yes. Charles Padullo.
I guess when you look at the workplace issues, it does create a significant liability question for employers. And it is at the core of why the Alaska Industry Support Alliance, why the Alaska State Chamber, why many organizations have come out and said, we do not support this. We think it's damaging to the workplace. People like Lisa Murkowski have come out and said, we oppose this initiative. She's scared because her son is working on a fishing boat. She doesn't want to increase the risk of danger. There's also the aspect that in the hearing in Barrow.
I don't know. How, can you spell that out for me? How would that increase?
So let me kind of bring it up this way.
What would be the risk?
Let me bring it up this way.
Beyond and I will, the situation now.
I will get to that. Just give me 30 seconds, Steve, and then I'd be happy to follow up. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services in Barrow, in hearings across the state, said their biggest concern was compounding alcohol and marijuana and the damage that it has.
And they're not alone. We're back to that Bush Alaska issue. It's a big one.
Absolutely. And a lot of the commercial fishermen in the state come from Bush Alaska. You have tourism that sometimes struggles to find employees for their business. Drug testing does not change, and the product will be more prevalent. I would ask Kaylee to talk a little bit about the lack of ability to test for stone driving. There are all kinds of problems associated with this initiative in the workplace.
Well, let's just do that. Kaylee Klaysmat joins us. She's executive director of the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police, and she doesn't like Prop 2 either.
Well, that's true, and I wouldn't characterize it that I don't like Prop 2. The chiefs have got a great deal of concern about the passage of Prop 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I would like to do is I'd like to take exception with the statements that I've been hearing bandied about both by our host and by proponents of the legislation, which are saying that marijuana is widely used in the state of Alaska. Recent statistics say that barely 10% of Alaskans have used marijuana within the last month. Less than 20% of them have used it in the past year. This is not a mainstream issue. This is something that a minority of the Alaskan population is involved in and wants. And to represent it otherwise is a great disservice to the population. But to get to the question that you asked me about, as far as the issues of safety on the roads and testing for marijuana impairment and so forth. And this is something that the chiefs have got a great deal of concern about. And, you know, we started investigating this issue many months ago, 6 or 8 months ago, when the proposition was first proposed, and we started hearing about it, and we started doing a lot of research and realized that the training of most Alaskan law enforcement officers is lacking in drug impairment recognition. Because while we have recognized alcohol impairment quite well over the years, drug impairment presents differently. There are different symptoms for it. You have to be alert to different things. And the biggest problem with dealing with it on the roadside is there is no breathalyzer for marijuana. There is nothing other than a two-faced test, or a two-phased test, I should say, that is toxicology, blood testing, and observational symptomology. So our officer on the roadside, when he's pulling over someone suspected of drug impairment, he has to be able to articulate certain symptoms that he sees, certain behaviors that he recognizes that indicate to him that the subject may be impaired with drugs. And then, in order to verify that, there has to be toxicology. They have to draw blood. So, you know, there is no more of this concept of, you know, blowing into a breathalyzer, finding that you're below the, you know, the limit, and going on down the road. That person who is now suspected of impairment is going to have to go and have blood drawn. Not everybody is willing to have blood drawn, so this generally means warrants. This all takes time. So this is going to create a big problem on the roadsides. And, you know, the first thing I hear from folks who are in favor of the legislation is that, well, we've got, you know, marijuana on the roads now, and it doesn't seem to be a great problem. You know, that may be that we're not identifying all the marijuana on the roads. Alaska does not do uniform toxicology on all fatalities. Therefore, we don't know what percentage are of fatal crashes or marijuana involved. But we know nationwide that they probably exceed about 25% of crashes. And the statistics that have recently been produced by, I think it was Cornell University, says that marijuana-involved fatal crashes have tripled over the past decade, a significant concern to us. The other point I would make is that in the first 6 months since marijuana was legalized in Washington State, the Washington State Patrol has identified 745 drivers testing positive for marijuana impairment. And that compares to 1,000 drivers who tested positive over the prior two-year period. So, you know, when marijuana is legalized, there's a high likelihood that we will be seeing more of it on our roads, and we're concerned about that.
Thank you, Kaylee Klaysmat of the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police. Good points all along. I have to throw this in, though. I think in Anchorage, police officers are quite accustomed to can figure out when people are stoned or not pretty well. I mean, it's just my observation. Now, going from there to any kind of probable cause or anything like that, as far as it, I don't think it enters in that much. But, you know, as far as not being able to recognize the symptoms, I think law enforcement people, the ones that I know, are extremely familiar with how a stone person acts.
Well, I can answer that for you as well. One of the things that we did when we were investigating this was that we sent a survey to all of our chiefs. And the national standard best practice is to have a certain type of training. There's two classes. One is called A-RIDE, which is, I think, advanced drug identification, driver exam, something of that nature, and then drug recognition expert, the DRE. And we asked each chief in the state how many of their personnel were trained to these levels. The numbers were not good. The numbers are very low. And Colorado found the same thing. What they thought was going to be good prior to legalization, they have found is completely inadequate now. We think that there are almost 700 officers in the state of Alaska that need the basic A-RIDE training. And right now there are only about 150 statewide that have the drug recognition expert training. And the drug recognition expert is critical in taking the case to court and
able
to, you know, present to a jury convincing evidence.
Oh, yeah, we're not talking evidence.
CSI generation, you know, juries expect a lot.
Yeah. I don't think we're talking evidence here, just whether they can recognize or not. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. And that was Kaylee Klaysmat of the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police again. And I know you're just bursting at the seams here, Taylor Bickford, to respond to all of these. But let's go back to her first point first. Because she basically said, look, I've been sitting here quietly, and you people have been saying there's people all over Alaska, huge numbers of them, using marijuana. It's just not true.
Well, I think she has a much different understanding of what's going on in Alaska than most people that I've talked to. I think that her numbers aren't correct. The percentage of people who use marijuana in Alaska is more like 15 or 20%, which equates to over 100,000 Alaskans. So if that doesn't, if that doesn't represent a meaningful number, then I'm not sure what would. I have to take really, really serious objection to a few things that Kaylee said. She stated that 25% of traffic fatalities nationally are the result of marijuana use. I mean, that is a statement that is so absurd on its face that it's barely even worth responding to.
That wasn't quite the factual assertion, was it, Kaylee?
No. What I've got here is a study, a 2010 study from the Maryland Level 1 Shock Trauma Center. It says 26.9% of drivers tested positive for marijuana on critical accidents. Drugs are present more than seven times more frequently than alcohol.
All right, yeah. So it's a question of cause and so forth.
Well,
go ahead,
so
Taylor.
I mean, part of the problem with these numbers that they keep using is they don't imply causation. I mean, someone uses marijuana, it stays in their system for sometimes up to 2 months. And so you look at these numbers that suggest, well, if you test positive for marijuana, you're in an accident. That does not mean that you were intoxicated at the time, and it does not mean that the marijuana use had anything to do with the accident. And yet we have organizations in this country, and we have people on the prohibitionist side of this movement that take those facts, and they tell voters and they tell people that this means that marijuana has caused these accidents. And it's really unfortunate, and I think that it is reflective of what we've heard in this country for 80 years. We have heard scare tactics after scare tactics after scare tactics. You answer one, they move on to another. And the fact is, they have a fundamental belief that responsible adults should not be able to make reasonable decisions about how to live their lives. They believe that people should be arrested and prosecuted for using marijuana. And that is a very different mentality than a lot of voters in the state have. And I think when you look at big issues of public policy, there are core values that kind of represent those issues. And then you have the tertiary issues that become associated with it. If you look at minimum wage, for example, what's the core value there? It's that you should be able to work hard in America and live comfortably as a result of that. Opponents think that the minimum wage actually makes it harder because of job losses and so forth. When you talk about marijuana, the core value that we're talking about here is, do responsible adults should they have the ability to make reasonable decisions about how to live their lives free from government intrusion? And people on the other side, they don't think they should. They think that the role of government is to legislate morality, that the role of government is to protect people from themselves.
Well, now you're branding.
Well, I think
that is not right. What people believe.
Well, it's not what this
Conference
is about.
Conference of Mayors, Unlimited, Use of Belly Coal Mine.
Yeah, yeah.
There
all
are
right.
hundreds
Charles,
of organizations.
Charles, time out, Charles, please. Let's go to Frank.
Send me to the corner, Steve. Send me to the corner. I get a timeout.
Joins the program from Fairbanks. Hi there, Frank.
Oh, hello.
How you doing? I was interrupting, Charles.
Go ahead. My name is Frank Berardi. I'm the chairman of the board for the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation. And my question is for Kaylee with the Association of Chiefs of Police.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask her if law enforcement has a financial interest in continuing prohibition. When I ask that, I'm referring to the Equitable Sharing Program.
What?
And also federal revenue that comes into the individual departments when they make low-level arrests, even if they don't seize property.
Whoa. Kaylee, I'm not sure what he's talking about.
I believe he's talking about asset forfeiture. And in my experience in Alaska, I have not seen a lot of asset forfeiture in use. And I would say that, no, it is not a concern financially. The costs that we're going to face just in training our officers and in preparing school resource officers far, far, far exceeds anything that would be garnered in asset forfeiture.
Okay, Frank, more?
Yeah, the Equitable Sharing Program is a program where law enforcement agencies are able to divert funds that would normally go to the general fund to the federal government for an 80% return. In fact, I think Don Young is behind a bill right now to try to end the Equitable Sharing Act, or at least raise the burden of proof for them to actually seize assets. Right now, law enforcement does seize assets. You have law enforcement auctions that auction these things off, these people's belongings, and I personally know people who have lost money and assets over marijuana crimes, but she's telling me that it's not an issue and that it doesn't happen.
I did not say it doesn't happen. I said it did not happen in great numbers. I was involved with a small police department here on the Kenai Peninsula for about 8 years, and I only saw one asset forfeiture issue that was done there during that period of time, and it happened to be a secondhand pickup truck. So I think that you are painting with a broad brush. Yes, the program exists, but I do not think, from my experience, and I can't speak for all of Alaska, perhaps you've got the statistics, perhaps you can tell me how many dollars Alaska police departments have received through your equitable sharing, we call it asset forfeiture program. You know, there are some federal agencies, U.S. Marshals, those that may well be benefiting from it. But, you know, I haven't seen it locally.
Yeah, Frank, probably hard to get those numbers,
sure.
Huh?
It is very hard to get those numbers, actually. You can definitely find information on the Equitable Sharing Program, but I haven't been able to find any information on how much individual law enforcement agencies benefit from this.
You know,
program.
I was thinking Mat-Su, where the big grow operations, most of the busts have been, you know, the big using electric meters and so forth, they find the grow operations. Quite a lot of money running through quite a few of those, and they had a lot of stuff to forfeit. So that there might be a place where there might have been quite a bit larger amount than just an old pickup truck, I would
but
think.
But many of those things would still be illegal under the current legislation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
now,
yeah. Well, good point there.
Well, my follow-up.
Okay,
I'm
go
sorry.
Ahead, Frank. Yeah.
My follow-up question is that even if in Alaska, if they don't seize large amounts of property, nationwide they do. And a lot of these sources for information that you're using are funded by either law enforcement agencies or other organizations with a financial interest in continuing prohibition. I mean, we all know that in Washington, you know, they busted 745 people with cannabis in their system, but we know that's no indication of actual impairment. We've also heard stories of them sitting outside of dispensaries pulling anyone over who drives out. Of course, even if somebody isn't intoxicated at the time, they're going to have levels of THC metabolites in their system simply because they consume. So that's just one example of a statistic that I believe is put forward to mislead the public into using law enforcement resources to enforce moral compass.
Now, the stories that you're suggesting there, as you said, the stories of people being pulled over from dispensaries and so forth, perhaps you can cite legitimate sources from them. The statistics that I provided to you all came from scientific research studies, not from law enforcement. They came from trauma centers. They came from the White House Office of Drug Control Policy, places like that. So, you know, there's a lot of anecdotal stories going around, but they may not all be true.
Yeah, okay, the war on drugs. Yeah, that's right. Thank you very much, Frank. That was very enlightening. Kaylee, please stay with us, and everybody wants to talk, so let's take a break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Sitting in the studio without saying a word is Bill Parker, retired Deputy Commissioner of Corrections, former state legislator back in more liberal days, back in the ad hoc days, I would say. And I want to get your perspective here, Bill. The voters have to make a decision here. There's a national trend going on. It's kind of like, do we climb on board with the rest of them? Or will we get stuck in a perilous situation and where, you know, where problems that maybe even Washington, Colorado wouldn't have, that we'll have, that'll really whipsaw us? Don't you think that could happen?
Well, Steve, if you just tuned into this program, you would think that the question on the ballot measure two is, shall there be marijuana in Alaska or not? Of course, the truth is marijuana is here. Over 100,000 adult Alaskans know something about marijuana. They know what it looks like. They know what it smells like. They know what it tastes like. They know what it feels like. So it's not like we're got some vice out there at the state line that we're holding the line on, and this would be a chink in the dike. Marijuana is here. It's a huge industry, millions and millions of dollars every year trade hands on the black market for marijuana in the state. And it's in exactly the same position alcohol was during Prohibition. That is, there were people who became bootleggers or who acquired booze through bootleggers who didn't break any other laws and who didn't have any respect for that one. Your point, Steve, the tipping point. America, certainly Colorado and Washington are first, but it's on the ballot in Oregon the same day it is here, and in Washington, D.C., the legalization of marijuana. So is Alaska at the tipping point? 10 years ago, marijuana got 44.4% to legalize on the Alaska ballot. In those 10 years, we think there's that many more who have come to the realization, like people in Washington and Colorado have, that since it's here, we'd better do something about it, regulate it, tax it, control it. Finally, in the case of alcohol prohibition, the same arguments then are reappearing now, but because it was so many years ago, we don't remember it. But
no, none of us do, man.
Well, I'm closest, but I don't remember it. I remember dinosaurs, but I can't remember Prohibition. So my final point is here that when it comes to regulating a substance that is in the society and is popular, We came to the conclusion with alcohol that prohibition failed, and I think everybody agrees now that we've got a better handle on alcohol than we did during prohibition. Here's our chance to do that with marijuana.
Well, more calls. Bruce joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bruce.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just want to make a couple of observations. First of all, as the gentleman was just saying, ballot measure two is not about should we have marijuana in Alaska or not. It's here. You know, the estimates are that, you know, somewhere upwards of 100,000 people are already consuming marijuana. And that's in an environment where it is illegal to grow and distribute it. And one could argue whether it's illegal or illegal to possess it. But there's 100,000 people that are consuming marijuana.
Says you.
Right now. Well, there are statistics that support that. Now, if you take an average street price, I'm going off numbers down in Colorado, $300 per ounce. That's about a $30 million industry. That's here, that's now. Prop 2 is not going to change that. What I mean by that, it's not going to create an industry when none exists. It already exists. But it's a black market industry. It's not being taxed. It's not being regulated. Now, if you take those 100,000 people, they're going to consume marijuana whether Prop 2 passes or not. There's a small percentage of people who do not because it is an illegal industry. Now, I think that that's important to keep in mind because the folks that are
what? So you're saying the market will grow, right?
It may, but here's my point. Here's why I make that point. The folks that are using it now, they're going to smoke marijuana whether it's legal or not. The folks who will consume it only when it becomes illegal. Those are responsible folks. Those are folks who are not going to smoke and drive. They're not going to smoke at work. They're not going to smoke if they're in an industry that requires drug testing. I'm in that category, by the way. I don't smoke it because I am subject to drug
testing. Just wait till that demon weed gets a hold of you, man.
Hey, I'm familiar with the culture, and I made a choice. You know, I was like, okay, I could be in a safety-related industry, or I could, you know, I could smoke weed. I don't know that I would, even if I wasn't drug tested. But, you know, adults, responsible adults, make that choice. Some will make bad choices, undoubtedly, but a lot of people will make the right choice. And I would contend that folks, any increase in the amount of people who are using marijuana is going to fall more to the side of people who are going to use it responsibly, which then brings it back to the original point, which are those other 100,000 people. Those folks are going to consume it in exactly the same way they always have, responsible or not. If they're driving under the influence now, they're going to continue to do that. If they're at work, you know, consuming and they shouldn't be, they're probably going to continue to do that. Those are poor choices, but they're personal choices, and we can't control that or change that by defeating or passing Prop 2. Now, a couple other things I'd like to just mention. Ballot Measure 2 contains specific terminology on, you know, what happens after this passes. So if it passes, the legislature will then designate a control board to come up with practical rulemaking. That rulemaking addresses things like marketing, like packaging, like, what am I trying to say?
Okay, try and wrap it up, would you, Bruce? Charles, okay. I'm going to ask Charles to respond to your very well-reasoned argument here.
Okay, my point is once Prop 2 passes, the rulemaking that goes into effect is going to address most of the major concerns. Nobody wants marijuana marketed to kids, and that's not going to happen. The people that want to get into that industry know that, and they're going to be looking for good rulemaking from the legislature that addresses that. That's all I have to say.
Okay, yeah. All right, Charles. Bruce really kind of laid out a really, really interesting debate-style argument.
Here's some responses to the argument. We're talking about this is not an initiative about whether marijuana should be here or not. It's bringing an industry in. It's similar to tobacco, the messages that came from tobacco. You know, it's safe, it's good, but it is a business that is predicated on increasing use. And when you have to increase use to make a profit, it is not simply about yes or no on marijuana. It's bringing an industry. And I want you to think about the money. The Marijuana Policy Project is a D.C.-based organization that is funded certainly not by Alaskans. The Yes on 2 is certainly not funded by Alaskans. It is a business that will come in, $700,000, and will start this industry.
But we can tax it, Charles.
Yes, and we can tax it, and the revenue in Colorado is much
lower.
Wait, Steve.
Think about it. Wait a second, Charles. The youngsters, all right? What about the youngsters? If you have regulation, you got more control over that. We have that with alcohol.
Here's the problem. When you put something and say that it's legal, you are sending the message to people that it's safe. And that is not a reasonable message to send to people because marijuana is not safe. The other aspect, Steve, is the revenue that we talk about. The Colorado revenue is down dramatically from what they expected. The other aspects are the stresses and the cost that the social net will have to bring in. The costs to our society from marijuana use are why organizations oppose
now
this.
You're going to start with your list again.
I'm not going to go to the and I wanted to talk about the black market.
The black market is thriving in Colorado. You just basically, the argument that the caller made was that any growth would be more responsible people than the people of their current.
And I disagree with that assessment.
Okay.
And what you will see from studies is that youth use increases where it is legal. That there has been a study in Colorado. The name, I think it was the Haida report that says that. And the other thing, I wanted to talk about the rulemaking process. Part of the concerns that mayors and police organizations across the state have is that any rule that changes the aspect of the initiative, they will sue to assure that there is advertising. Because if you look at the way the initiative is written, what happens is it takes away from the integrity of what the law would be, and these businesses that are spending the $700,000 will do whatever they can to assure that there is advertising.
Okay.
And then you cannot change the law for 2 years after it is put in place.
Yeah, Taylor Bickford, look at it. Wait, advertising, but it's on the way.
First of all, there's been this attempt by the opposition to distract from the core issues of the campaign, and they've tried to make it all about money. And they've totally misrepresented the marijuana policy project throughout this process. The federal government is spending billions of dollars a year fighting a war on marijuana, and that involves propaganda, and that involves ginning up fear amongst some of the organizations that Charles is mentioning. What the Marijuana Policy Project has done for our campaign and others is it gives the activists on the ground a voice. It gives them a way to fight back. This is a nonprofit organization. It is not funded by big marijuana. Its sole purpose is to end the harmful policies of marijuana prohibition. And we welcome their support because without it, all we would have in this debate is Charles and people associated with this group using these scare tactics and misinforming Alaskans about what the initiative actually does.
Much better than the last time around when the only guy I could get on was the P-test guy.
Rob Campia.
Pretty obvious.
Hold on.
Rob Campia is with the Marijuana Policy Project, and this is an exact quote. While most people don't care about Alaska, the Marijuana Policy Project doesn't care about Alaska.
Well,
we're a domino effect for them. That's what this is. This is not a typical nonprofit that is concerned about Alaska.
All right, more calls. North Pole, Tom in North Pole. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hey, I'm 70 years old. I was raised in Wyoming, and this crap that marijuana isn't as powerful then as today or whatever it is this crap, because they had powerful marijuana and hash and all that other stuff back then.
Yeah, nobody brings up hash.
But really what bugs me here is I'm kind of a bottom line kind of guy, and I look at the last line on a death certificate, and I don't see marijuana overdose on the last line of death certificates like I see with alcohol and everything. I mean, you can kill yourself with water. You know, there's been people killed, death certificate that says overdosed on water, right? I don't see any bottom line that people are dying in droves because of overdosing on marijuana. If it's so damned dangerous, how come that is?
Tom, that was beautiful. Thank you.
It was beautiful.
How about Kaylee gets an opportunity to respond?
Well, wait a second.
That.
I got one for her, and this one comes from Keith in Anchorage. So I used to drink and smoke weed all the time. When I drank, I got angry. Look for excuses to be violent. When I smoked weed, I only cared if somebody tried to take away my munchies. How is marijuana usage supposedly more dangerous than alcohol? Charles Padulo or Kaylee Klaysmat?
I want to take that real quickly. Just read a study this morning on domestic violence. The Journal of Interpersonal Violence wrote, adolescent marijuana use led to an increased risk of partner violence. And I guess I would ask Kaylee to talk about what the caller from North Pole was speaking.
Yeah, I've got 2 points to make on that. I'd like to answer both of them. As far as the bottom line on a death certificate, I would pop in here that I've got almost 25 years of EMS experience working as a medical chief. And in that experience, you know, we saw drugs, and I had a lot of training and that sort of thing. And what I would tell you is that the suggestion that marijuana doesn't kill is really an exaggeration, because how does cocaine kill? Cocaine affects the brain, makes the heart rev up, and, you know, oftentimes people have heart attacks or cardiac episodes. With marijuana, it affects the brain. It affects the judgment center of the brain, and people do silly things that kill them. So, you know, marijuana does have the effect of killing. I myself saw a gentleman decide to go swimming after imbibing too much alcohol and marijuana together, got to the bottom and couldn't remember where up was or how to swim. You know, we dragged out his body about 2 hours later. There was no bumping of the heads or no physical problem. The only thing that caused his death was the drowning due to marijuana and alcohol. I would also want to point to an article that was just in the Denver Post a few days ago, where it talked about a man who was supposedly stoned on marijuana-infused candy. I'm quoting here, reading here. He flipped out, killed his wife with a gunshot to the head while their 3 children were in their home. He then asked his 7-year-old son to kill him. An interesting thing with that is that he was not a long-term marijuana user. He had very low levels of THC in his blood. But researchers have pointed out that Kerry Franson, who's an associate dean at the University of Colorado Skye School of Pharmacy, has done extensive research into this. And she said that marijuana should really be compared more to morphine than to alcohol, because low levels on new people who have not had it before, you know, can have quite an effect. But as you use it, become chronic users, use it longer, you need more to get high. You know, so that's kind of an interesting case.
Yeah.
I look at the mechanism of death. It doesn't really matter if you're shot with the bullet or beat to death with the butt of the gun, you're still dead.
And it's not, they wouldn't even, it's just not going to be show up in the death certificate. We probably all agree about that.
And Steve, can I just respond really quickly to
quickly,
that?
Yes.
I think what you just heard was, you heard Kaylee just compare marijuana to cocaine and to morphine. And I think this is one of the frustrations that people have over the course of this debate, is that the folks on the no side have just a fundamental misunderstanding of what marijuana actually is. They compare it to hard drugs, and they make these outlandish claims about what it's responsible for. The case that Kaylee just referred to with the shooting, the guy who did that was also on a number of prescription painkillers. The example she gave of the pool drowning was someone who was obviously very, very intoxicated on alcohol. And what you don't have is objective stories or facts or even really anecdotes about people who do these things on marijuana alone, and yet the opposition tries to equate these things with marijuana causing violence, et cetera.
I have to take a break, but it's purely a guess then that he couldn't figure out which way was up.
Research, studies, and media stories, these are not anecdotes, and they are backed up by facts.
That's an anecdote.
Yes, I apologize. Some are anecdotes.
But you're not mentioning the prescription painkillers. That was left out of her description, and that's
effectively
left out.
Fine. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by ExxonMobil Alaska, where more than 1,000 Alaskan men and women are working on the Point Thompson Project, proving energy lives here.
Oh, wow. Here's a great way to come back from Homer Tila in Homer. I don't have issue with folks who responsibly smoke marijuana illegally. However, if the law were to change, the result would likely affect the cultural attitude of acceptance towards the drug. My experience is that marijuana inhibits a person from being their best self. I rather would raise my kids in a state that supports the social norms of awesomeness rather than mediocrity.
Well, I think this comes back to a role of government question. And, you know, as a parent with a 10-month-old daughter, I think that it's ultimately my responsibility to teach her good judgment and to teach her to make good decisions, and that being a good parent is ultimately what leads to kids avoiding substance abuse. But when you try to put that responsibility in the hands of the government, it just doesn't work. And we've lived with prohibition for 80 years, and prohibition has done nothing to stop teenagers in this state in particular from using marijuana. Federal surveys show that up to 80% of high school seniors say that they can get marijuana easily. Anybody who went to high school in this state knows that you can get marijuana more easily than you can get regulated substances like tobacco and alcohol. And in Colorado, which has decided to regulate marijuana like alcohol, teen use of marijuana has actually decreased.
Do we know for sure?
That came from the Colorado Department of Public Health.
Whoa.
And it was over the course of the launching of the medical dispensaries and the recreational dispensaries.
Okay.
Obviously, we only have a few months of data,
right.
But what we know without question is that the claims that were being made by Charles's counterparts in Colorado that teen use would skyrocket, that has not happened, and
right.
It's because
okay.
When you regulate it, it's harder for kids to get.
Okay, let's go to Rich in Sitka. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Rich.
Hi, Steve. My concern is this. If you've got a law that makes 10 to 15%, depending on whose statistics you believe, lawbreakers, they break the law when they use the product, they break the law when they buy the product, doesn't that just undermine respect for all law and order? If you feel you can break one law, then maybe you feel you can break another law. And I'm thinking about this because when I raised my kids here, marijuana was pretty much legal in Alaska. Then it became illegal. And my kids kept asking, well, is so-and-so now a criminal? If they're a criminal, they're a good person. Is it okay to break the law? When you have a law that many people break, keeping it illegal, I think, undermines the whole legal process and undermines respect for law and for the police who have to enforce that law.
Thank you, Rich and Sika. I think I'll take that one to Kaylee Klaismet of the Chiefs of Police.
My answer to that or my question perhaps in return is, you know, when I'm driving down the highway, I see an awful lot of people that like to exceed the speed limit. So should that mean then because a great percentage of people like to exceed the speed limit that we should do away with speed limits?
Actually, yes, but okay.
All right. Well, that's beautiful. Thank you so much. Taylor Bickford, let me turn to you on this. Taylor is a spokesman for the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. And do you think there would be a reduction in the workload of our legal justice system if this thing passed?
If you look at numbers that were put together by the ACLU in a report that was released in 2013, they found that in 2010, which was the year that they looked at, that over 2,000 Alaskans were arrested for marijuana possession, and that the enforcement of marijuana possession laws cost the state of Alaska $8 to $14 million a year.
That just doesn't sound right because of the constitutional. They don't dare prosecute these.
Okay, but that's for the home. The Raven decision found was that the Alaska's right to privacy protects limited amounts of home possession,
right.
But that doesn't extend outside of the home.
Okay.
And, you know,
if it's in a vehicle or, you know, yeah.
Right. And then you have the folks that are, who want to use marijuana have to criminalize themselves to do that. And so the purchase is illegal, the sale is illegal, the whole system is illegal. You have to magically sort of show up with it in the privacy of your home, and that doesn't happen. So
you would say it would reduce the
I think it would. And I also think that we have to recognize that, alcohol, again, is the real problem in this state. And economists have looked at this and have found that it is very likely that any increase in marijuana use as a result of legalization would actually correspond with a decrease in the use of alcohol. And that is a huge, very, very important public health benefit for the state.
Let's try and get an answer from Charles Padula, being very good here.
The experts, I don't want to be sent to the corner again, Steve. The experts at the Department of Health and Social Services, again, testified in Barrow, and they said their biggest concern is the combination of alcohol and marijuana. I guess I would refer to Kaylee, but the Department of Corrections testified in Barrow that there were 14 people in jail for simple marijuana possession. And I guess I would listen to Kaylee's perception as a law enforcement professional with a history over a spokesperson for a campaign.
And Kaylee,
and the ACLU's numbers, which they released last year.
Kaylee, do you think there could be an increase?
Not really. I'm just, you know, I look at the numbers of people that are, you know, imprisoned and so forth now that are convicted of marijuana, and the numbers are very, very small, and the majority of them have got other charges as well. So it's not like the doors are going to open and these people are going to go free. I mean, we have a lot of simultaneous convictions or concurrent convictions for anything from sexual assault to misconduct involving weapons. You know, it's going to be a problem, and I really don't see that alcohol is going to be reduced if marijuana is increased.
Okay.
I would love to see the
time
study.
Time for one more caller here. Amos in Juneau. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Short if you can, Amos.
Hey.
Hey.
So my concern in this issue is the economic issue and the cartels and the black market income. And I'd like to see, you know, that go away. But at the same time, what are they going to use to replace that revenue? Are they going to switch to other drugs to swamp the markets here?
Oy.
That's my concern also.
Wow. Okay, Taylor, that's an interesting speculation. I mean, you know, here we got these drug dealers and suddenly it's legal and they're out of business. So do they take up other drugs?
Well, I think first of all, I just really quickly want to go back to Kaylee's last comments and Charles's. The numbers that I gave were not numbers that I made up. Those were numbers that were released by the American Civil Liberties Union, which is a respected organization.
Okay, but running out of time here.
So on the question here, what we know without question is that over the long run, when you regulate marijuana and move it into a regulated environment, the black market will go away. It's not going to happen overnight. This is a system that has been in place for 80 years.
What about the drug dealers
themselves? Well, they'll, I guess, have to go find a real job. I mean, and the fact that...
their own radio
school teachers.
Shows.
This show is dissolving into laughter. I can't believe it.
No, but I think, you know, look, the industry's here. It's being run by criminals in the underground market. Colorado has created 10,000 jobs that are good jobs for responsible
people.
It didn't
do near what they thought it would do, though.
Well, because it's the first year, and we have to see how this plays out over the long run. But the idea that, you know, legalizing marijuana will somehow empower the black market is just really absurd. And there's a reason why you don't see a thriving underground alcohol industry in this country. It took some time after Prohibition to eliminate that. But over the long run, it transfers into the legal market and the black market goes away, which is ultimately a very, very good thing for Alaska.
You got just a few seconds.
Bootlegging is still an issue in rural Alaska. Look, the bottom line is this is an extreme initiative that's going to commercialize, industrialize, and advertising material that's attractive to kids. It's going to cost the state money. It's going to stress our social services safety net, and it's going to make Alaska a more dangerous place.
I want to thank all of my guests for being with us. It's really been an enjoyable conversation. I don't know if we got anywhere with it, but I had a good time.
Thank you
so much for listening. Dave Waldron, Josh Edge, Ashley Snyder, thank you for helping with the show. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.